You're listening to There Ought to Be a Law, the Center for Auto Safety podcast with Executive Director Michael Brooks, Chief Engineer Fred Perkins, and hosted by me, Anthony Simino. For over 50 years, the Center for Auto Safety has worked to make cars safer.
Hey, listeners. We've been teasing it for months now, but finally, this is our Terms of Service episode. That's right. We read through the Terms of Service for Waymo, for Uber, for Robotaxi, and maybe these guys read through some others, but I'll just give you an extent of the amount of information there. Waymo alone was, I don't know how many documents, but well over 10,000 words. And I thought I had counted them all until it goes, no, reveal this section, because every document relates to another document that relates to another document, to another document, to another document, to another document. And with that in mind, this extensive, this voluminous amount of information that you agree to the second you step into a Waymo, an Uber, or Robotaxi, probably applies to Lyft as well. Every single one of them say that you are responsible for, if you have guests, for making sure that they are aware of every part of the terms of service, which is, you would never get anywhere. I mean, first of all, you go into law school. And you're not going to like some fly-by-night institution anyway to understand this stuff. You're spending serious time in law school, in contract law. You're going to have to clerk for some judge for a number of years. And then when you're like, okay, I understand all this stuff, I've read through it. Hey, Fred. Hey, Michael. We're going to get into this Waymo, Uber, Robotaxi thing. But before we get into the vehicle, I'm going to spend the next year and a half explaining to you guys what we're all agreeing to.
Right. If it's not possible to read the agreements before you accept the service, can those agreements be binding on you, Michael? I mean, if you call an Uber and you go through the app and it says, okay, sign the terms of service, it's simply not possible for you to read them and understand them in the time it's going to take before the Uber driver says, hey, I'm out of here. I got better things to do than watch you read.
Yeah, I mean, whether that's enforceable is going to depend on a lot of things, mainly, you know, I think where you live and whether, you know, your state has any protections. You know, I think California has more significant protections against some of the fine print language we'll be talking about today than most anywhere else. But, you know, it comes down to, you know, what provision you're talking about within the fine print, and you know in some cases, you know, whether you can even get to a judge in your state to decide whether or not the contract is going to apply to you is in question due to, you know, the virtual, there's virtually a binding arbitration clause in almost every one of these we've read that functions to prevent you from getting to court and availing yourself of state law in the first place.
Every single one does have a binding arbitration, mandatory individual arbitration. So this is, yeah, if you get into a Waymo and it explodes, and Bob gets into a Waymo and it explodes, and Cheryl gets into a Waymo and it explodes, you can't come together as a class and say, hey, let's pool our resources. We've all experienced the same injury. No, you have to individually present your case, and then you have no idea that Cheryl's Uber blew up and that Bob's Waymo exploded. So you have no idea, and you can't work together to better humanity. But they all do have an exception there. It says you have, once you agree to this, and if you've already taken one of these services, it's probably too late for you, but you have, I think, Waymo, you have 30 days to send them an email saying you opt out, yep, of arbitration. Robotaxi, I believe they gave you 60 days.
Right. But you have, yeah, the difference, you have to send a letter to Tesla.
You do have to, yeah. Yeah. One, you, yeah, can send an email.
And
one,
not everybody will have an opt out of arbitration. I didn't see one in the Uber opt out. So no. If you're, you know, riding in a Waymo through the Uber app, there becomes a question of, you know, which one of those is going to apply, or you have to go to, can you go to court against Waymo, but have to go to arbitration against Uber? It's one of those things, and that, you know, you're agreeing to in seconds, and no one out there, except nerds like me, are thinking whether I just bound myself to arbitration. So it that just highlights the kind of the imbalance of the parties that are working here. You know, you've got a multi-billion, maybe trillion plus dollar company and an individual who is being told that they can't use any of their state, local, federal laws to avail themselves of, you know, reimbursement or, you know, if the worst happens, if there's a crash, you know, there's really a question here of whether you can go after, you know, Waymo or Uber if, you know, your driver in the vehicle and an Uber, the human driver, wasn't properly vetted by the company and screws up. If they knew the driver was performing badly and driving unsafely through data that they acquired, you know, from monitoring that driver's operations.
Hey, you know, Michael, yep. Let me back you up just a little bit. What's wrong with binding arbitration? I mean, we've heard over my entire lifetime the Republicans screaming about how unfair it is to try lawyers or, you know, getting money. We've heard about how unfair it is that, you know, torts are unlimited and we need to have tort reform. And isn't, you know, isn't that where all this arbitration comes from? That it's efficient, it's clean, it's saving everybody money, and it's completely fair to all the parties. Yeah. It's binding and, you know, it's according to the rules. So what's wrong with binding arbitration?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that are wrong with it. You know, first of all, by removing your ability to go to court, you know, you're kind of removing your ability to be able to bear out or prove a claim against the manufacturer. You know, when you get into an arbitration, it doesn't operate under the same rules as the federal or state justice systems. In fact, there are multiple different arbitration groups that run arbitrations. All of them have their own particular procedures. And so companies will often seek out the one that makes the most sense for them. And, you know, beyond that, you know, you're being forced into this agreement. I mean, what, not forced, but, you know, you can either, it's a take it or leave it thing. You can either agree to the arbitration or not use the service. So that becomes, you know, just a problem in, you know, whether or not the consumer truly understood what they were getting themselves into. I would argue that, you know, 90% plus of the time they don't. And these are very, you know, complex contracts. Most people aren't going to understand them. You know, you're not going to call your lawyer every time you sign up for one of these services. That's, you know, obviously wouldn't make sense to get an opinion from your attorney on a contract that you, you know, really have no ability to negotiate anyway before agreeing to. And once you get into arbitration, the process is secret. So if there is a mass defect in one of the vehicles operated by one of the companies we're going to be discussing, none of that information is going to make it into the public in order to prevent other people from experiencing the same problem that could threaten their lives or cause injuries or, you know, any number of negative outcomes. And at the same time, you'll see, you know, invariably in similar sections of the terms of service or terms of use, you'll see, you know, prohibitions on jury trials, prohibitions on, you know, class actions. Essentially, you know, prohibitions on bringing your case wherever you want to. You know, often you'll see these companies select, you know, the state and the law that they want to be applied in their cases. And what do you think they're going to do? Pick the state that's got the best consumer protection laws? No, they're going to pursue it, try to have you pursue your claim in a state that's or a jurisdiction where the consumer protection laws are going to be leaned in their favor. So that's just a brief overview of some of the problems with binding arbitration. There are, you know, folks out there who could probably name a million more than I could.
Okay, but one other aspect of that is time, right? If you take something to court, it's going to take you an awful long time. You got to find the attorney, you got to file, you got to go through process, you got to do all that. Isn't the arbitration zippy and, you know, it gets you something much more quickly than if you go to trial?
Yeah, I don't know if there are any hard data on that. I don't know why anyone would choose, you know, the speed of it versus a, you know, a just outcome. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But typically, I would say, you know, if you're in an arbitration, your ability to prove your case is going to be significantly limited versus bringing suit in state or federal court.
Why is that? Don't the same facts get brought forward?
No. They can't be, because you're limited. For instance, in arbitration, you might be limited to only one deposition of one person at the company you're engaged against. You know, you're not going to be able to bring in a lot of expert witnesses. You know, and maybe arbitration, you know, can work when you're talking about, you know, minimal damage and situation that, you know, might be brought in small claims court. But the odd thing is, you'll see in a lot of these terms of service that small claims courts are typically exempted from the arbitration provision. So it doesn't seem they're trying to protect themselves from the smaller claims. It seems like a lot of these arbitration agreements are geared towards major things, you know, car crashes and injuries and deaths that might leave the manufacturer or the service provider liable.
So right now,
thanks.
We've hailed our autonomous vehicle. You went to law school. You spent a long time explaining to your friends what's going to happen. Years have passed, and you're finally sitting down inside the vehicle. Now, all of them can change their terms of service at any point for any reason whatsoever. So, you know, hopefully you're staying up to date on that. But as a good lawyer, you are. But you've also given up your rights to a jury trial, which in the U.S. is essentially giving up a huge part of what it means to be a U.S. citizen. Very strange choice, but this is what you're doing. So I looked into compare this to, I live in New York City. When I hail a cab, you know, what kind of terms of service am I agreeing to there? And I looked into this, and what you find from the New York City government is, here's your passenger bill of rights. That's the first thing that you get. Basically, you're not going to be harassed. You're not going to be discriminated against. You're not going to be in a car that's dirty. You're not going to be a car where the driver's honking the horn constantly. And then everything else is, you're not going to be a criminal. You're not going to rob the driver. You're not going to destroy things. There's no arbitration. There's no agreement that you're agreeing to, except, you know, to basically to be a human living society. It's fascinating, the differences here. Once you take a rideshare thing, you've completely thrown out your ability to be a normal human. But if you put your hand up and wave down a cab, you're an adult still.
Somehow there's kind of this tech company moving into our traditional world that's happened here. We've got, you know, manufacturers and auto dealers for a long time, although I think they're starting to use it more and more, typically didn't use binding arbitration provisions. They, you know, obviously were reaching a concrete agreement with you that was signed and dated on that day, and those are the provisions that are applying going forward. Meanwhile, from the 80s on, maybe earlier, software companies were developing software that required you to agree to an end user license agreement or some other type of agreement prior to using the software that can essentially, since that point, contains terms that could be modified by the company you're agreeing to a contract with at any time. And so what we've seen is kind of as more tech companies have been involved in the auto space, with Uber and with Google and with other folks from the tech industry getting involved in automobiles, we've seen kind of a migration of these arbitration provisions into the, you know, auto focused areas, to the extent where, you know, now we're very concerned as we see more automated features, you know, partially automated features move into cars. You know, we've got, you know, Tesla involved, and they've got binding arbitration required in their contracts. You know, I think Ford Blue Cruise is another one I noticed that, although I didn't find their arbitration provision to be incredibly strong compared to some of the others we've seen. You know, they do require consumers with issues to take them to arbitration if they have a problem with their Blue Cruise system. So it's something that we're really scared and that we've been harping on for a number of years as we've seen autonomous vehicle bills come out that essentially provide an incredibly broad preemption to these companies, to, you know, companies that you contract with that can change these contracts on a whim on a day-to-day basis to fit what they want their world to look like. And you essentially have no control. We're really worried about those becoming commonplace in all of our interactions with vehicle and essentially, you know, really disrupting the process for victims to seek redress in the civil justice system rather than being, you know, shunted off into this kangaroo court of arbitration where it's questionable whether they're going to be able to, you know, put forth their full case. And, you know, these arbitration courts are almost invariably going to be engaged more on the side of the people who are propping them up and paying for their services, which are these corporations.
So I want to jump into some specifics here, especially around an issue we've talked about a lot. Whereas in San Francisco, a lot of parents are saying, hey, I'm just going to put my 12-year-old inside a Waymo and send them off to school. Now, Fred Perkins, here's a quiz question for you. You're a parent. You got a 12-year-old. You're living in San Francisco. You're carefree. If you put a 12-year-old put your 12-year-old into the Waymo by themselves and let them go off?
According to Waymo, no.
No, you're not.
You're not allowed to do that.
Because
people do it all the time. But, you know, I went through that their terms of service in some detail. And what they require for their teen service, they've got some teen services specified, is that you have to have that approved by your adult or your guardian or whoever that is. And it only applies to people who are 14 to 17.
In the Phoenix area. That's it.
Was the Phoenix area?
It is okay. Just Phoenix. Yeah, I'll quote directly from Waymo's terms of service. You must be 18 or older to ride alone. To use the app and Roto-Lane, you must be 18 or older unless you're in the Phoenix metro area and have a teen account ages 14 to 17. If you're under the age of 13, you're not allowed in a Waymo ever.
Well, I also wonder how...
No, not even with a parent, you're not allowed.
Come on.
Yeah.
Well, how can it be binding, Michael? Because if you're under 18 and you sign up for the terms of service, is that an enforceable contract? Because it's, you know, some kid 14 signs their terms of service for the teen service and says, okay, I'll be good. Is that even binding? The kid's not 18.
I think you have to run it through the parent's account to yes. do that. So
you do, but you still have to get the acknowledgement and agreement of the kid.
I'm still not seeing anywhere where you absolutely can't ride in a Waymo if you're 13. You're right. Right.
I got that confused. It's robo taxis. Okay. The Tesla robo taxi. You're not allowed to be quoting from theirs. Minors under the age of 13 are not permitted in the robo taxi. It's robo taxi, not Waymo. But that is a definite line from the robo taxi terms of service. So if you violate any of these terms of service in Waymo, like a number of parents have come publicly said this to the media in San Francisco, they do this. Their Waymo accounts are void. They're not allowed to use them anymore, according to Waymo. But hey, I guess you can't, you know, you can get away with anything you want, right? Okay. Another one, continue with Waymo. This is another one that I thought was fascinating. I'm going to quote from here. If you're using our service on behalf of a corporate entity, you represent that you are authorized to accept these terms on that entity's behalf and that that entity agrees to be responsible to us if you or the entity violate these terms. In these cases, the terms you will refer collectively to you and that other entity. So I'm on a business trip and I work for Giant Corporation X, not actually X, Giant Corporation Y, we'll call it. And I get Waymo. Now, am I authorizing Giant Corporation Y to these terms of service? Like, can you not use this as a company perk anymore? Like, it's very confusing. Like, does that just void everything entirely? Or am I committing fraud by booking this through my corporate credit card?
You know, I'm not really sure what that provision is trying to do or why they would want to, you know, if you're taking a business trip and you are hopping in a Waymo on the business trip, I think what they are trying to protect themselves from then is if something happens to you, then your employer going after Waymo there. Essentially, they want to bind your employer to the arbitration and the other provisions therein.
How does that work? But I'm just, you know, I'm some low-level office dweller. I mean, this seems like quite a stretch.
I think it would be a hell of a stretch to get to get that to fly in court. But, you know, there's a lot of things in here that are essentially a reach that are there. You know, they may be overturned in court later, but they give, you know, Waymo an argument to try to get an action. You know, there are a lot of times when someone brings a case in a court of law and then are told, wait, you signed this arbitration provision. You're out of here. That happens a lot more frequently than you want to think. And that's really why we're against the arbitration provisions from the get-go. And in this case, you know, they can say almost anything in these agreements that they want to and see if it flies in court. I just have a hard time believing that if you're not in the leadership of a corporate entity, that you in any way are authorized to accept the terms. And when you're riding in a Waymo on behalf of that entity, that's highly skeptical that that would fly in court.
I keep coming back to the whole idea that nobody in the world has got time to read this agreement. They jump in their car. I mean, it takes hours to just get through the agreement. And then there's going to be additional documents included by reference. It will take more hours to get through it. All of them require a pretty sophisticated legal background to understand it. And even then, the provisions aren't clear. I just don't understand how the courts can say, well, you know, it's fine. It's a fraudulent transaction. You were bound to something. You have no idea what the scope of it is, but that's okay. This is America freedom.
Yeah, it's a massive failure on behalf by our, you know, legislatures and courts to prevent these types of this type of language from applying to consumer transactions. I mean, there are a number of areas that we'll discuss as we go through all these today where, you know, all of these are situations where there's clearly unequal bargaining power between the parties to the contract, and yet courts and legislatures and you know governors and the president aren't stepping in to ensure that, you know, consumers' rights are protected. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that they're trying to provide, I think the major argument here is they're trying to provide an efficient operating mechanism for the folks who are trying to get you to sign these agreements in the first place, because it's very difficult to negotiate an individual transaction with, you know, 200 million users of your services across the country. I mean, think about what kind of nightmare that would be for a business. And so by allowing some of these contracts to proceed in this way, they're essentially, you know, recognizing that it's very difficult for a company to succeed if they're having to negotiate a new contract or every change. Imagine that if you had to negotiate every change to your contract with every one of your customers. And so they're giving this practice the nod as a way to promote efficiency in business.
I'm going to guess is the main difference here that between this and traditional taxi services, at least in New York, whereas Uber, Waymo, they don't actually own their vehicles. The drivers don't actually work for them. They're contractors. So their service they're providing really is just software. Whereas with a New York City taxi, the person driving it, odds are they actually own the license to drive it. They might not own the vehicle, but they own the medallion, which allows them to become a taxi driver. And so it's more of a one-on-one relationship, and it's only a time limited for how long you're in the vehicle. Are these the main differences, or is this just tech bro nonsense trying to tech bro.
Look, I mean, the difference is the taxi driver isn't sitting at home trying to find ways to get out from under liability from you before you get in the vehicle, right? They're individuals as well. They're not massively sophisticated. They can't afford, you know, a staff of $1 million lawyers that can draft these contracts that they can then throw in your face in court when, you know, they realize not, I mean, they know probably less than 1%, far less than 1% of all the people signing these contracts isn't reading them and truly agreeing to them in the way that human beings have been looking and agreeing to contracts with each other for thousands of years, right? So the difference, I think, is it comes back to that lack of bargaining power. You've got an entity that has significant monetary and legal powers that they can deploy to try to subvert your rights as a consumer. And you have virtually no choice in the contract if you want to use the service. So, you know, one thing that I think that everyone needs to be on the lookout for are opt-out provisions. You know, Tesla has them, Waymo has them, not everyone, but that would almost be an automatic send in the letter, send the email in, opt out of the arbitration provisions or any other restricted provisions where an opt-out is given. That's not, virtually the only one that I've seen an opt-out for in these contracts was the arbitration provision.
That's all I've seen. You only have 30 days to do it or 60
yeah.
days.
Well, yeah, and that opportunity will be found on page 33 of the agreement. Yep. So, you know, it's not readily apparent to anybody who's casually getting into a robo-taxi after having a few drinks that, you know, I should really go through page 33 and find out how I can manipulate this in any way to opt out of those agreements.
How can you? You're drunk. You can't, you know, I mean, you're happy you got into the right car.
Well, that's a good point.
So, all right, here's a fun little quiz for you guys. Ready? Out of Uber, Waymo, and Tesla's robotaxi, who's more likely, according to their terms of service and their legal documents, to film and record you inside the vehicle?
More likely, I don't know. Waymo's got 100% opportunity to do that. I don't know how you can have more than 100%. So
I would say
they're going to Waymo.
Okay. They're all likely to, you know. Uber has a section under its terms of service that specifically applies to autonomous vehicles. If you're riding in an Uber that is functioning as an autonomous vehicle, you know, you're getting, you know, you have a less expectation of privacy than you would getting into a normal Uber with a human driver. And they make that pretty clear. But you know, we've seen Waymos, and we know that Waymos are video monitoring people in their vehicles. They tell you, and we've seen the pregnant lady a few weeks ago who was giving birth in the Waymo, and the Waymo detected it on its own, or you know, with the assistance of remote viewers that can see inside the vehicle. So I don't know. Are you saying Tesla might be the best here?
Well, what I'm going to say is Uber is by far the worst. Uber and their documents say there's a section called in-vehicle recordings. If you take a ride in an autonomous vehicle, we will collect videos of you taken by in-camera cameras. We may also collect audio recordings, such as when you contact Uber during a trip for customer support. Before that, they're the only one says identity verification information. This refers to the data that we collect to verify your account or identity. This may include biometric data that allows you to be identified based on your physical or biological characteristics. Nobody else has biometric data. So Uber is by far the most onerous in terms of that. Waymo.
Well, what are they talking about there? Are they just talking about your ability to use your thumbprint on your phone to access your account?
It doesn't say. It literally just says, you know, we may include biometric data that allows you to
identified. It's not like they're collecting, you know, a DNA sample from you when you get in the vehicle. So it's
I surely, assume they're doing facial recognition. And don't call me Shirley. So next up, Waymo says,
Before you leave Uber.
Yeah.
I just wanted to point out that if you are using Uber as an autonomous vehicle provider, they have additional terms and conditions, and you have to go through the agreement, and somewhere in the agreement, it says, that the third party provider's terms and conditions are incorporated herein by reference. Right. Then they bring you to the AV ride terms of service and the Waymo terms of service. So you've not only got the 33 pages of the Uber agreement to read, you've got the 100 plus pages in both the AV ride terms of service and Waymo terms of service. Meanwhile, the vehicle's honking at you to get the hell in the car or go away. So I don't know. Has anybody ever made this argument, Michael, that it's just impossible, literally impossible, I mean, for somebody to get this service, but also go through the user agreements?
You know, even before these provisions were being presented in a way, you know, the way you're presenting is just like it's this immediate thing. Even if you're sitting at home and you're signing up for the Uber app, no human being is going through all of these things. And I think that's just generally well known, and it's just been accepted by the courts, and that this is an acceptable way to tie people into contracts. Now, it's not every court. There are definitely variances in states, but it's, you know, there's clearly a lack of understanding on the part of one of the parties involved. There's clearly a lack of legal ability and, you know, ability to understand what the hell all this means. I mean, there are going to be provisions in here that, you know, I'm an attorney and I'm going to have to go through a few times to figure out what they're getting at. You know, you can't expect a 19-year-old that, you know, is not trained or not legally prepared to be able to evaluate these provisions in the same way. It's, you know, that is the whole point, essentially, of our argument against these types of provisions and this ability to change language and contract right beneath the consumer, is that the consumer, ultimately, their only choice here is either not to use the service if they want to not be bound by those provisions. And it's a terrible choice that we're presented with. And it's, you know, frankly, these provisions should be deemed unconscionable by courts across the nation. And, you know, it comes down to a lot of things in our life, our culture, our politics. You know, money has power. And when you can pay thousands of attorneys to do your bidding and try to get these types of contracts upheld in courts across the country, and you're battling against individual consumers who don't have those resources, then ultimately you're going to win a lot of times in courts, and these types of contracts are going to be upheld.
Yeah, I didn't see any expiration dates on any of these. So if you order some French fries through Uber Eats, are you still bound by this agreement 25 years later when the Uber runs over you?
Not the state of California.
I don't think. Yeah, that's a question I don't think has been explored well at all. But we did see that case in New Jersey where the child's use of the Uber Eats. It was what we thought was a particularly poor decision by the court, but where the child using the Uber Eats bound the parents to arbitration. I don't know if you take that situation to some of the, you know, some of its possible logical consequences. I would have to see a court stepping in to protect someone who was not using the services at the time. Say you're in another car or you're a pedestrian and an Uber vehicle strikes you. I have a hard time thinking that even in our current America that the courts would be able to find that you were somehow still bound by that agreement.
Listeners, I'd like to point out. I'm sorry, go on.
But there's always a chance, right, Fred?
But for somebody who jumps in the Uber after they had a few drinks, they have no way of knowing what that limitation is or if it's going to bind them for the rest of their lives. Is that correct? True statement.
There are no guarantees here, because ultimately whether or not these provisions are going to apply to you is going to come down to what happens if you challenge these provisions in court.
But you can't. You have to go through binding arbitration.
Well, what'll essentially happen is if you bring a case in court, the judge will have to make a determination of whether binding arbitration applies, and they could take into account some of the arguments that Fred is making. You know, some courts will find that, you know, they're going to throw out this binding arbitration contract and you're going to be able to avail yourself of your rights in civil court. Now, the manufacturers will probably appeal that because we've seen them do that as well. Ultimately, their goal will be to get you into an arbitration situation where everything's kept private and they don't have to take a PR hit on it while they have, you know, chosen that arbitrator because it's one that is, you know, probably going to give them a better outcome most of the time than it would if they were being dragged into civil court.
Listeners, at this point, I'd like to point out that by listening to this podcast, you've agreed to the Center for Auto Safety's terms of service, which include giving us a donation of $1,000 before the end of 2026. Failure to do so will wind up in binding arbitration. Your arbitrator will be Fred Perkins.
Oh, wow.
Yay.
That is a raw deal.
Okay, so I want to continue. I pointed out some of the issues inside a Uber. In Waymo, what they say with cameras and microphones says, so specifically for their teen account says, where applicable by law, we may record audio and our video. You should review our privacy policy with your parent guardian so you understand our privacy practice before using our services. That's what every 14-year-old wants to do. Mom, Dad, I have some questions about life. Can we go through?
Well, I'm glad we've had this talk, Tommy.
Yeah, exactly. How are bad laws made? So then further down for everybody else, cameras and microphones. We record video inside the vehicle during trips. We only record audio during active voice calls with rider support or when you actively choose to enable microphones. But then it has a section further down, microphones inside the car. The microphones inside the car are only on during voice calls with rider support or when you actively choose to enable them. We know this is, we're not actually sure about this because again, there was a situation of the woman giving birth and their support team got involved. There's no indication this woman contacted support. So who knows? This is a little creepy, but I will point out that Waymo says we do not collect any biometric data on you. So that's something.
Did they tell you what they can do with the videos or anything collected?
Yes, we will hold on to them for as long as we need to complete our investigation. Okay. All three of them say that.
They're not going to use, you know, images. They're not going to create their own episodes of Taxi Cab Confessions, for instance.
So that, is one of those. So that's, I'm going to go to Tesla first, but they all have something around user content.
And that's when you create something, right?
But I mean, they just recorded it. You created it. But anyway, let's go to.
Is that real? Yeah.
Yeah, let's do that. So Tesla, this blew me away. Tesla says when you summon a ride, cabin camera and sound detection are off by default until needed. For example, when you initiate a request for support or you provide help in case of an emergency. Your in-vehicle robotaxi experiences are also protected from media streaming to surfing the web, blah, blah, blah. We're not collecting any of this data. And then they even go further. It says a green indicator is displayed on the rear touchscreen when the cabin camera is active. An orange indicator is displayed on the touchscreen when the microphone is being used. So Tesla actually says, you know, hey, we're going to let you know when we're actively filming you or actively listening to you. Uber does not do that. Waymo doesn't do that. So that's, you know, that's one point for Tesla. Blah! Sorry. It was quite surprising to me.
Well, Uber's got a provision here that says Uber shall not be liable for indirect, incidental, special, exemplary, punitive, or consequential damages, including lost profits, lost data, personal injury or death, or property damage related to, in connection with, or otherwise resulting from any use of the services, regardless of the negligence, paren, either active, affirmative, sole, or concurrent, close parentheses, of Uber, even if Uber has been advised of the possibility of such damages. Michael, to me, that's something to do whatever the hell they want for, you know, any reason or no reason.
Yeah, fortunately, that's one of those clauses that's going to be looked upon with pretty significant suspicion in court. You know, they're trying to limit their liability. And clauses like that have various outcomes depending on the state you're in. But a significant number of states will prevent that type. Any type of clause that prevents you from being sued for negligence, should you commit a negligent act in the future, is going to have a difficult time holding up in many courts. Not all, unfortunately, but those are just general limitation of liability language. And I don't think we've come across a contract that doesn't have that type of information in it.
So, Michael, to your question of what they can do with your data. So, Uber and Waymo definitely have this. I don't remember if Tesla actually have this, but they have sections called user content, where our services may allow you and others to create, post, store, share content, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't say that if them filming and recording you, if they've created, if you're creating the content or they are, but you own the copyright to this, except that you grant us a worldwide license, for that's perpetual, irrevocable, and non-exclusive, royalty-free, worldwide, fully paid, and sublicensable license to use, reproduce, modify, adapt, publish, translate, create different works from, distribute, resell, publicly perform and display your user content and any name, username, voice, image, personal likeness. Basically, you've signed away anything you've ever thought while inside one of these vehicles. And we can do whatever the hell we want with it. And it goes on. Like, Waymo's is pretty deep like that. Uber's is pretty deep like that, basically saying, hey, if you do anything inside our vehicle, because it doesn't say where you create, post, store, share this information. At least, so if I'm putting it up to my Insta TikTok account, does that mean that Waymo gets to use that because I filmed it in the backseat of one of their vehicles? I'm not sure.
That sure is what it sounds like.
It does sound like that. Even creepier with Uber Teen sharing data. I'll quote, this also includes social, they share data with social media companies like Meta and TikTok, whose tools we use in our apps and websites, and professional service providers like accountants, consultants, and lawyers. They have that carve out specifically for Uber Teen. So again, if you're a 14 to 17 year old in the Phoenix area, they're going to share your data with anybody they like, because, you know, you're a teen. What are you going to do?
Because they can sell it and it's worth money, unfortunately, right?
It's fascinating. Before we jump into a very specific safety question, I have another quiz, guys. Okay, out of Tesla's Robotaxi, Waymo, and Uber, who probably fell asleep at one point, did a little lazy job on their terms of service? Who did the weirdest part of their terms of service? Anybody?
You know, I've got to guess Tesla just because of their approach. But
okay. Michael says Tesla. Know. Mr. Perkins.
I don't know where you speak, but I'd probably go with Tesla too because they're weird.
Yeah, you're right. So Tesla, the last two sections of its Robotaxi terms of service have to do with superchargers, not Robotaxis. There is two big sections on using superchargers. Nothing that has nothing to do with you being in a Robotaxi. You're in a Robotaxi. You're not using a supercharger. Like that's, you're not there plugging it in and paying for it. Instead, they just cut and paste two paragraphs from their supercharger terms of use and put it inside Robotaxis. You're both winners.
Yeah, that's odd. And I mean, I think that gives you a little insight into, you know, how often these things are changing. Like they can't even get them straight on their end.
All right. So I'm going to go into a very specific safety related feature. Cause some listeners, you might be like, okay, I get this, but what exactly does it have to do with auto safety? Well, one, you get into a crash or accident and whatnot, and you want to know what your rights are. But directly from Waymo's terms of service, I'm going to quote, the services, including our autonomous driving system and accessibility settings, depend upon emerging technologies and could become inoperable or inaccessible for a period of time, or may function erratically or improperly with little to no advance notice.
We've seen all that.
I mean, that's basically them saying, might work.
Well, it's them saying, you know, we're not perfect and, you know, shit happens. and when it does, you know, we are limiting what our liability might be to you, the consumer. And, you know, whether that flies in your local court is one thing. But, you know, it's why not put it in the contract that these consumers have to sign, right?
But I thought, and Fred's pointed out repeatedly in the show that Waymo's claim is that we're safer than humans. We're virtually perfect, unless you're getting off a school bus in Atlanta.
Well, I mean, I don't know that they put it quite like that, but you know, I think we've seen dozens, maybe at this point we're into hundreds of Waymo follies. You know, there are things that don't quite rise to the level of, you know, an injury or death occurring due to a Waymo vehicle's action, but they're problematic. And you know, I hesitate to even call what's going on with the school buses a folly, or what's going on, you know, in a couple of situations where, you know, driving into a active shootout and some of the other things we've seen as far as blocking streets and preventing emergency access and that sort of thing. But we know they're going to screw up. I mean, you know, this idea that the robot is perfect and the humans aren't, I think we've countered that on plenty of occasions on this podcast, and don't really need to go into it too much. But, you know, they know that these vehicles aren't perfect. They know they're going to screw up. And when they screw up, inevitably, they want provisions in their terms of service that cover those situations and can be used to limit their liability in court. That's all it comes down to.
You're muted, Fred.
There's another reason related to safety. Uber says that Uber does not guarantee the quality, suitability, safety, or ability of third-party providers. Now, they also insist that all of their drivers are third-party providers, I think.
Right.
But continuing what they said, you agree that the entire risk arising out of your use of the services and any service or good requested or obtained from third-party providers in connection therewith remains solely with you to the maximum extent permitted under applicable law. So, Michael, as I read this, it means that whatever happens, you, the poor sap who sits in the back seat paying for it, are responsible for it. And if, you know, they talk about cleaning and repairs, they say the amount of such fee shall be determined in Uber's sole discretion based on the type of damage and the severity. So if anything happens, you're on the hook, not them, and not the third-party provider,
The third-party provider is not as, you know, obviously, they're not worried about protecting the third-party provider. If your Uber driver, you know, injures you or worse, and, you know, you take them to court, this contract is not going to protect them. And their Uber is perfectly happy with you taking that driver to court as long as it doesn't impact their bottom line. So what you're seeing there is essentially Uber's attempt both to limit their own liability while even, you know, pushing off and trying to ensure that that third party provider or your driver is a separate, considered to be a very separate legal entity from Uber.
This also relates to what we were talking about kind of before the show, was that if you get a Uber or coming soon, I guess a Lyft, but it's doing a robo taxi and it's using either Waymo or Zoox or whoever in the future to be the autonomous driver. So now you've agreed to Waymo, Lyft's terms of service. And then it also, you by default, you're agreeing to, Waymo's or, you know, Zoox or whoever their terms of service. These terms of service could be in conflict with each other. Who the hell agreed to anything here? Like, what are you agreeing to? Is that your best, as a consumer, is that your best course of action? Be like, hey, I want to get on a Waymo, but I'm going to do it through Uber instead because their contracts are just going to conflict with each other.
Well, yeah. Uber's contract includes Waymo terms of service by reference. Right. So, you know, who wins, Michael, or are you the user subject to both terms of service?
They both win and you lose, right? Oh. I mean, if you're accepting Uber terms of service that incorporates the Waymo's terms of service, you know, unless, and you know, the Uber terms of service are specifically protecting Uber from problems that you encounter, and then refer to the Waymo terms of service if you're thinking about bringing Waymo into court for a problem. So while there might be, and there probably will be, you know, conflicting provisions in each of those, they would only be applied as to any legal action you might take towards Waymo or towards Uber. So, you know, who knows how many, you know, I'm wondering what the limit is here. How many, if you agree to one contract, how many other contracts can be tacked onto it? It seems kind of crazy that you know, they could tack on an agreement for the supplier of every piece of equipment in the vehicle. You know, the cars have, what, 30,000 parts? You could have, you know, a few thousand user agreements attached to it from those companies as well. So at some point, it becomes, you know, mind-boggling and even more illustrative of what Fred's complaining about from the beginning here, which is that these are essentially contracts where consumers are having their rights stripped away. And there's ultimately, I don't think, any real public policy benefit here other than corporate and business efficiency at the expense of consumers.
And just for reference, I went through the Uber agreement and did a word count. There are 33 pages, 14,423 words, and at least 9 additional outside references that they included by reference. So that's 14,000. That's a pretty big reading assignment.
Yeah. We, hey, listeners, you should thank us because we read through all of this nonsense. You don't know how painful this was, but we're doing it for you. So as we come to the end here, so the takeaway seems to be that you get into a robo-taxi or even just a ride-hail service, you're giving up your basic rights to a jury trial. You're giving up your rights to any content that you create. You're possibly going to be filmed or audio recorded, and you have no rights to that information. If anything bad happens, you lose. Whereas if you get into a bus or a flag down a cab, you kind of know what your rights are. You know, you don't get onto a bus or even an airplane. And there's a contract as a passenger. When you get onto an airplane, you're agreeing to a contract. But thankfully, due to a bunch of lawyers, you have a bunch of rights. The airline's not going to be like, well, you know, the plane lost its wheel, you got a damage, but we'll see you in arbitration. Nope. That's not how it's going to work. You know.
Well, you know, there's a contract of carriage in the airline ticket that will often include binding arbitration, class action waivers.
And they didn't think they were allowed to do that.
Everything that happens when they lose your luggage and all of that is dictated in those contracts. You know, whether or not they're enforceable, right, is another thing. But, you know, that's part of the problem is that there is a federal law, the Federal Arbitration Act, that allows this broad application of mandatory binding arbitration clauses across the economy. You know, they've only recently migrated into the auto space in the last 20 years, but they've been around forever, and they're not going away unless we see changes to that law, which is something that Senator Blumenthal has been spearheading for a while now in his bill to basically go in and tweak the Federal Arbitration Act in a way that makes it actually responsive to consumers and prevents some of the abuses that we've seen.
Oh, I thought it was that, you know, because if you get bumped from a flight, they have to compensate you. You know, there's a bunch of little things like that.
There are some rights included in there that are actual rights versus what we're seeing in a lot of the ones we went through today, which are not really rights. They're more of taking rights.
Yes, you agree to lose this.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And folks, don't forget, according to these agreements, if the Uber that you're in crashes, you have to pay to get the car fixed. So enjoy that.
Yeah. You have to pay for anything you messed up in there. So as the car crashes and you evacuate, you gotta pay to clean up that mess in the backseat.
Yep.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, listeners far and wide, except for those teens between the ages of 14 and 17, unless you're in the Phoenix area, thanks for listening. We'll be back again next week with a less legalistic deep dive of documents. Please, God, don't let me read this stuff again. Thanks for listening. We did the hard work for you.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
For more information, visit www.autosafety.org.